This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, September 28, 2005. From KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado. A House committee meeting on Capitol Hill discusses the outcome of the UN Reform Conference. Evolutionary theory goes on trial in Pennsylvania. We'll hear about Christian conservative attempts to teach intelligent design. And people in Liberia are concerned that former president and alleged war crimes criminal Charles Taylor is bankrolling presidential candidates. These stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Leanne Caldwell with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Representative from Texas, Tom DeLay, has been indicted. A grand jury charged him and two political associates for political conspiracy. Tom DeLay spoke today at his office in the Capitol.
Ronnie Earle charged me with one count of criminal conspiracy, a reckless charge wholly unsupported by the facts. This is one of the weakest, most baseless indictments in American history. It's a sham, and Mr. Earle knows it.
The House Majority Leader will step down from that post, but will retain his seat in the House. As Ellen Ratner reports, this is not the first time Representative DeLay has run into legal trouble.
The Texas grand jury that filed the charges had been investigating DeLay and his political action committee, Texans for a Republican Majority, for months following accusations of questionable fundraising techniques that surfaced following the 2002 midterm elections. DeLay and his TRM are accused of accepting approximately $600,000 in illegal corporate campaign contributions. Texas law prohibits corporate money from being used for campaign activities. Following the Republicans' retaking of the Texas legislature in 2002, DeLay advocated for a controversial remapping of the state's congressional districts that led to even more Republicans being elected to the Texas House seats. This has not been the first time DeLay has been accused of abusing power and influence. In 2004, DeLay received three admonitions from the House Ethics Committee for various instances of intimidation and mismanagement of federal agencies in political issues. Press Secretary Scott McClellan told reporters today that President Bush still believes that DeLay is a strong leader and that they have worked together many times in the past to accomplish things on behalf of the American people. McClellan refused to give the president's opinion of the indictment, but said that there was a legal process in place to decide the matter. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ellen Ratner in Washington, D.C.
Israel has continued its attacks and search for Palestinian militants into its fifth day, knocking out power to thousands of residents in Gaza. Manar Jabreen has more on this story.
Chief of Israeli Army Operations warned Palestinians they will use artillery to shell the Palestinian areas, including civilian homes, if the resistance groups do not stop firing the homemade Qassam shells from the Gaza Strip. Palestinian factions have already declared they will halt all attacks against Israeli targets from the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Israel continues to shell the Gaza Strip. It blames the Palestinian Authority for stalling the peace process and threatens to unilaterally annex land from the West Bank and withdraw to what Israel believes would be its new permanent borders. Through the years of its occupation of the West Bank, Israel has unilaterally annexed thousands of acres from the West Bank for the construction of settlements and the separation wall. I am Manar Jibreen.
Elite French troops this morning stormed a ship occupied by workers protesting at the planned privatization of a state-owned ferry company. The roughly 30 trade unionists aboard could face up to 20 years in jail. Demonstrators, however, showed their support of the workers at the southern French port of Marseille. Tony Cross reports from Paris.
At 8:30 this morning, 50 black-clad and masked members of an elite anti-hijack unit, accompanied by Navy commandos, were flown by helicopter to the Pascal Pauli cargo com passenger ship as it tried to enter the port of Bastia. They seized it without resistance from the 30 members of a Corsican nationalist trade union who were aboard. They too were masked, but they were unarmed. The strikers had overpowered officers and seized the ship, which had no passengers on board. They have been charged with hijacking a boat, which could mean 20 years in jail. This afternoon, 120 members of another trade union, the CGT, sailed dinghies into the mainland port of Marseille to call for their colleagues to be released. On Monday and Tuesday, riot police cleared strikers out of both ports. Two workers have been charged with refusing to disperse when ordered after those clashes. Marseille has been paralyzed by the strike since Monday. Dockers and sailors are trying to stop plans to sell off the state-owned SNCM ferry company, which runs sea links between mainland France and Corsica and Algeria. The potential buyer is a company owned by Franco-American businessman Walter Botler. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Tony Cross in Paris.
Mexico's Secretary of Agriculture has resigned amidst intensifying protests by sugarcane workers. Shannon Young reports from Oaxaca.
Sugarcane farmers occupied mills in sugar-producing states throughout Mexico yesterday and continued to stage sit-in protests in front of government offices. Today, over 2,000 farmers blockaded the entrances of the Secretary of Agriculture's headquarters in Mexico City. Mexico's Secretary of Agriculture was a key figure in the negotiations between sugar industry representatives and the federal government. However, he presented his resignation this week in order to campaign for governor in his home state of Guanajuato. Meanwhile, sugarcane workers are trying to pressure the Fox administration to adhere to the Sugarcane Sustainability Act, a law that sugar producers say is necessary for the industry's survival. The Federal Attorney General's office has requested a judicial review of the law, questioning the constitutionality of a number of provisions. The Secretary of Agriculture's resignation is one of three cabinet-level vacancies created within the span of 1 week. For FSRN, this is Shannon Young in Oaxaca.
And I'm Leanne Caldwell, WPFW in Washington, D.C.
House Republican leader Tom DeLay of Texas has stepped down from his leadership position today after being indicted by a Texas grand jury for conspiring to circumvent Texas election laws. Mitch Jezerich has more.
In accordance with the rules of the House Republican Conference, I will temporarily step aside as floor leader in order to win exoneration from these baseless charges.
Today, the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, Tom DeLay, temporarily stepped down from his leadership role. According to the House Republican rules, any leader who has been indicted must step down from a leadership position while an investigation ensues. The indictment, handed down by a Texas grand jury, accuses DeLay and two others of illegally influencing several swing districts in the Texas state legislature. The indictment was sought after by Tarvis County District Attorney Ronnie Earl. Defending himself today in Washington, DeLay accused Earl of being on a witch hunt.
Over the course of this long and bitter political battle, it became clear that the retribution for our success would be ferocious. Today, that retribution is being exacted. Mr. Earl, an unabashed partisan zealot with a well-documented history of launching baseless investigations and indictments against his political enemies, has been targeting a political action committee on whose advisory board I once served.
The Tom DeLay redistricting plan, which was financed with these illegal corporate contributions, was the sole reason why Republicans picked up seats in the Congress.
Tyson Slocum with Public Citizen says Tom DeLay has finally got what he deserves. He calls the indictment a proper charge for a political scheme executed in the 2002 elections that had the long-term effect of increasing the Republican majority in Congress after the 2004 elections.
Tom DeLay's Political Action Committee, Texans for Republican Majority, was formed for the sole purpose of raising enormous amounts of money to try to influence elections at the state level in Texas in order to obtain Tom DeLay and Karl Rove's dream of having the Texas state government in charge of the redistricting process.
If convicted, DeLay faces a maximum of 2 years in a state jail and a fine of up to $10,000. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jezerich.
The House Committee on International Relations held a meeting today on the outcome of the United Nations high-level event held 2 weeks ago in connection to UN reform. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations John Bolton discussed the U.S. agenda in the reform. Anastasia Nesditska reports from Capitol Hill.
Ambassador Bolton stated that there are three major areas in which the United Nations should be reformed. First, fighting terrorism should be a top priority on the UN agenda. Second, the UN must go through an organizational structural reform. And third, there must be a change in the funding structure of the United Nations. Bolton said that the US needs to introduce these changes into the Security Council. Bolton also said that the wrong countries are leading the commissions within the UN.
The pattern has been that if a regional group let's say, offers up an uncontested slate for the allocated seats of the Latin America region on the Human Rights Commission, so that if Cuba, as an example, persuades the Latin American group that it wants to be on the Human Rights Commission and there's no other opposition from other Latin American countries, if Cuba gets elected. It is that regional group system leads to the circumstances, the anomalies that I think everybody on this committee has observed, for example, how some of the worst human rights offenders in the world somehow get seats on the UN Human Rights Commission, or how countries that have such as Iran, that have poor records, to say the least, on non-proliferation matters, can find themselves, as Iran was up until recently, on the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
While questioning Bolton, California Democratic Representative Tom Lantos pointed out that the reform should prevent certain countries from obstructing U.S. policies within the U.N.
The group of nations that led the anti-U.S. effort to clean up the United Nations. My understanding is that these nations included Egypt, Cuba, Venezuela, Pakistan, Zimbabwe, Sudan, Iran, Algeria, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Burma.
Finally, Lantos presented two proposals for UN funding reform.
Both Chairman Hyde and I want all of the reforms that are listed, over 40 of them. His version calls for an automatic 50% cut in U.S. contributions to the United Nations. Not every single one of them is enacted over a period of time. My version provides for discretion for our Secretary of State to determine the extent and severity of the cut.
Bolton told congressional members that the U.S. should act quickly to introduce changes before the beginning of the next U.N. fiscal year in January 2006. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Anastasia Gnezditskaya in Washington, D.C.
A trial is underway in a Pennsylvania federal court on the debate over the teaching of evolution in public schools. A religious theory dubbed intelligent design contends that life is best explained not by evolution, but by an intelligent force. Intelligent design disagrees with the core of evolutionary theory, which is the scientifically based curriculum taught in most public schools. A public high school in Dover, Pennsylvania, however, is apparently the first in the nation to require students be informed about intelligent design as part of the curriculum. Dover's policy mandates school administrators read a statement before biology class that says evolutionary theory is not fact and refers students to an intelligent design text to obtain more information. Eight families have sued the school district, saying the policy violates the separation between church and state and that the district's policy promotes a biblical view of creation. We're joined on the line by Wesley Aylesbury with the National Center for Science Education. President Bush said on Monday that he thinks that intelligent design should be taught along with evolution, and Christian conservatives have certainly been pushing for this to be added in public school curricula. What does this issue and this trial in particular say about what's important for public school policy?
Well, this is what we have to determine is what we're going to teach in science classrooms going to be science, or are we going to have non-science also taught in science classrooms and confuse our students about what they're learning? And what is at issue here in the Kitzmiller versus Dover Area School District case is the impermissible content, not just the impermissible label. Now, in former cases, creationism has been held to be unconstitutional. It's the same content that is being distributed in the form of pandas and people. It's called intelligent design now. It's just a different label put on the same content.
The Thomas More Law Center from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is defending the Dover School District. They say it has nothing to do with a religious agenda and is, in fact, about free inquiry in education. Is that really so?
No, it is not. We can see this by looking back at what the prior not permissible content of creationism was, looking at what is being offered in the Dover Area School District now, which is the content of Pandas and People, a supplemental text published by the Foundation for Thought and Ethics. And in the opening statement, Eric Rothschild of the plaintiff's counsel demonstrated that a definition given in an earlier draft, an early unpublished draft of Pandas and People, stated that creation was the theory that animals appear suddenly, fish with fins, bird with feathers, etc. And then in the published version, it says intelligent design is the theory that animals appear suddenly, fish with fins, birds with feathers, etc. It's just special creation all over again. It's the same thing. They've just stuck another label on it.
Wesley Ellsbury is with the National Center for Science Education. The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit in August on behalf of a Connecticut librarian organization challenging a provision of the USA Patriot Act that forces public and private institutions to give information about patrons, including borrowed materials and internet use. Civil libertarians, members of Congress, and librarians petitioned the Justice Department today to lift a gag order silencing citizens who have received demands for special records under the Patriot Act. Selena Masuta reports from Washington, D.C.
Mr. Gonzalez, I urge you to let John Doe speak.
That was Alice Knapp, the president of the Connecticut Library Association. Knapp is referring to John Doe, a Connecticut librarian who, under the Patriot Act, was issued a national security letter, which authorizes the FBI to demand a range of personal records without court approval, including library records and the identities of people who have used library computers. The Justice Department refuses to disclose how many national security letters have been issued. Democratic Representative Gerald Nadler of New York has drafted legislation to reform the Patriot Act because he believes that provisions within the Patriot Act are unconstitutional.
They don't have to describe with any particularity what information they're looking for, or why they want it, or why it is why there's some cause to believe a crime has been committed or may be committed, and why this is relevant to that. Now, the Fourth Amendment says that you cannot have search a person's paper, its effect, etc., without particularly describing the place to be searched and the thing you're looking for. This seems a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Steve Lilienthal of the Free Congress Foundation says that the Patriot Act provisions not only affects libraries.
They could encompass any number of businesses. So Americans who have no involvement in terrorism could have their records of their transactions they want kept confidential, swept up in a dragnet, without the government having shown justifiable cause for the confiscation of the individual's records.
Ann Beeson is the lead attorney for John Doe. As the Patriot Act stands right now, there's no clear penalty for institutions or persons who fail to comply with the national security letter. However, under a proposed House amendment, that could change.
One of the things that the bad House version of the Patriot Act reauthorization legislation does is to specifically put in severe criminal penalties for violating the gag provision.
Sometime in the next 2 weeks, the House and Senate will be taking up parts of the Patriot Act for reauthorization. Civil liberty groups are hoping that John Doe will be allowed to speak before those provisions get to the floors of Congress. Selena Masuta, FSRN in Washington, D.C.
Pickets are up at 6 locations around Santa Cruz County after 145 Metro bus drivers, represented by United Transportation Union Local 23, went on strike Tuesday. FSRN's Vinny Lombardo has the details.
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
For how long?
3 years!
The driver's last contract expired in July. Various levels of pressure by drivers, including pickets and work slowdowns, failed to produce a deal. After months of talks with a state-appointed mediator, a tentative agreement was reached in early September. But Metro's board of directors rejected the contract last week.
Basically, they said, go strike. So we did.
Metro driver Bonnie Moore is chair of UTU Local 23.
For us, this is an unfair labor practice, bad faith bargaining, when the negotiating team signs an agreement and then it gets reneged upon.
Santa Cruz bus drivers start at about $34,000 a year, with step increases up to $52,000 after 6 years. They also receive 4 to 6 weeks of paid vacation time each year, with the option of taking an additional month of unpaid leave. Metro's general manager, Les White, says drivers are striking over a contractual clause which would allow them to retain benefits for this general leave.
2.72% of total salary in new money has been added to drive down the amount of money that workers with families pay for health care costs.
White says general leave was removed from the contract to make that a continuing lowered health care cost. According to Peter Prince, a Metro driver for 26 years, another sticking point is hours and work rules that the district tried to impose.
They need to have more drivers to cover it, and they've been refusing to hire for almost a year.
About 23,000 people ride the Santa Cruz bus system daily to get to and from grocery stores, jobs, and doctor's appointments. Thousands of students also use the Metro buses due to limited parking on campus. UC Santa Cruz student Christina Vasquez.
Well, I hope that they get what they want. Nothing against the workers or nothing, but this kind of sucks for us.
Vinny Lombardo, FSRN, Santa Cruz.
Members of the new Change to Win coalition, made up of unions that split from the AFL-CIO, held a rally outside an engineering firm in downtown Oakland to coincide with a day-long founding convention taking place in St. Louis Tuesday. Grace Turner reports.
30 members of the 7 unions making up the new Change to Win labor coalition gathered outside the offices of the engineering firm CH2M Hill, which was awarded more than $1 million in federal contracts to rebuild New Orleans. The labor coalition wanted to highlight its Gulf Coast rebuilding initiative.
You can't come in there and suspend workers' rights and think that we're not going to say nothing.
Education Director of SEIU Local 790, Kariga Hart, says the new Change to Win Federation, or CTWF, is setting up a comprehensive renewal and retraining program in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. The Gulf Coast Training Initiative will include 3 major components: a training facility operated by the Laborers Union in Louisiana, a worker assistance center run by Unite Here, and an SEIU healthcare training center.
The Change to Win unions are willing to work with contractors. This new federation has a training program that will empower the workers and the poor and train them so that they can rebuild the South themselves. But contractors, we're not going to work with them if it means the loss of workers' rights and if they expect us to be silent around issues of poverty.
Clarence Thomas, member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 10 and co-chair of the Million Worker March.
George Bush has basically undone public policy over the last 40 years. The community needs to have some say-so about how their communities are rebuilt. And labor needs to be at the table to teach and to make sure that individuals are brought into those unions.
Thomas was against a split from the AFL-CIO, but he now believes in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, labor needs to join together. Change to Win is asking engineering firm CH2M Hill to partner with community, religious, and labor groups to plan the rebuilding effort. In St. Louis, delegates at the Change to Win convention adopted a new constitution, pledged to organize Walmart, and elected Anna Berger. She is the first woman in U.S. history to head a labor federation. Edgar Romney was chosen as a secretary treasurer. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Grace Turner in Oakland.
As the West African nation of Liberia prepares for its first post-Civil War presidential elections on October 11, sustained peace is a major campaign issue. Yet throughout the region, the continued liberty of former Liberian president and alleged war criminal Charles Taylor remains a cause of considerable anxiety. Rupert Cook reports from Sierra Leone.
Friday afternoon prayers in Freetown, the capital of Sierra Leone. This small West African nation is a cosmopolitan mix of different religions and tribes. Despite the legacy of a more than decade-long civil war, the country has seen little conflict based on religious or tribal difference. Yet, while it's achieved much in rebuilding and reconciliation over the last 3 years, there remains considerable anxiety that strife could once again return. Although the international community has set up the Special Court for Sierra Leone to try those who bear the greatest responsibility for war crimes, many are still concerned by an ongoing culture of impunity. Bishop Joseph Humper is chairman of Sierra Leone's Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Indeed, there remains in Sierra Leone a problem of impunity.
considering those who did the atrocious acts, seeing them there, moving around, marks an element of impunity. People will realize that, in fact, you cannot do anything to your people and go scot-free because you are in a position of responsibility, in a high position. Probably long after, maybe a younger generation coming up now will look at this to see, why did this happen?
A key figure in Sierra Leone's and the region's conflict-ridden history has been Charles Taylor, who led a rebel faction in neighboring Liberia from 1989 until elected president in 1997. His campaign had as its slogan, "He killed my ma, he killed my pa, I'll vote for him." From across the border, he was the power behind the scenes for Sierra Leone's rebel RUF, which committed most of the atrocities during the civil war. It's also alleged he was involved in gun running, narcotics, dealing in blood diamonds, and suspected links to Al-Qaeda. Although Charles Taylor is the special court's number one indictee, today he's living in comfortable exile in a villa in southern Nigeria. As part of the deal which ended the Liberian civil war, Taylor was granted sanctuary. In Liberia, presidential candidates are campaigning for elections due on the 11th of October. It's thought that Taylor is probably bankrolling several of the contenders. The fear is that the new Liberian government might merely be the pawn for Taylor's return. Many warn that Charles Taylor's continued liberty not only consolidates the culture of impunity, but also threatens regional stability. David Crane was the prosecutor at the special court's inception. He originally cited Charles Taylor as the court's number one indictee.
Charles Taylor hangs like a dark cloud over the peace process in Liberia. Everybody in West Africa knows Charles Taylor, and they know that he will be back. If he is not turned over, what we have here is an African exception to the Nuremberg Principles. What we are telling Africans in the world is that an African leader can kill his own people and not be held accountable for that. And it's a huge insult to the people of Africa, who really, in fact, deserve no impunity.
Despite calls for greater U.S. pressure in securing Taylor's extradition to face trial, there seems little concerted effort on the part of the international community. Although Liberians will soon have their say in presidential elections, back in Sierra Leone, there's a belief that much hangs in the balance while Charles Taylor enjoys continued impunity. Zainab Bangura is executive director of Sierra Leonean NGO, the National Accountability Group.
I think one of the biggest challenges we have is dealing with the impunity. And I think if we have Charles Taylor, the special court should have been justifiable in a much bigger sense. I think Charles Taylor should be brought from the courts so that the courts will regain its credibility.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rupert Cook in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WPFW in Washington, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles. Our newscast is produced by Simba Russo and Monica Lopez. Headlines editor is Leanne Caldwell. Today's Washington editor is Selena Masuta, sitting in for Mitch Jezerich. Our technical production team includes Jay Paget-Seekins and Eric Klein. Free Speech Radio News is an independent, worker-run collective. You can check us out at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.